Doctor.
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 And doctor. Well, we miss anyone?
He's Northwestern Medicine BP. Call Dr. Most right now.
Doctor. Kevin Most.
Most Doctor.
Joins us live. Thank you for that, Doc. Good morning. You're sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. The pursuit of better health care starts here. And how are you?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Doing fine. Thank you.
Good.
Let's jump right in here, because we always take the opportunity to talk about what's ailing you. We got into a bit of a discussion about addiction, but really couldn't do it justice. So you want to pick that up?
Yeah, you know, we always try to highlight things that are in the news. And I think one of the things that we avoid, and I'm not saying I avoid, you avoid, but just us in public, I'll say, or the general population, is we stay away from addiction because of the social stigma with it, and we kind of feel like, oh, that doesn't feel comfortable talking about it. And yet people have to realize that it's a medical condition that everyone has an opportunity to make an impact well beyond what a physician can make, actually.
And you and I both know people in the program, and your friend and my brother, Mickey, now sober for 15 years, is just one example of the millions of people out there who have beaten it. You have to decide to save your own life, and you have to commit to the many resources that are out there, and you're going to lay some stuff out for us here.
Yeah, and, you know, and Mickey's a perfect example. He is so proud of what he has done to fight this addiction. He'll tell you exactly how many days, and he'll tell you, I mean, he called me when he hit 15 years and said, hey, 15 years, Dr. Most, you know, and you could just hear the pride in his voice that he shared.
Well, he should be proud. Anybody that's gone through that and goes through that, it is still a day-to-day fight, and it is for the rest of your life, and it's worth it.
Yeah, that's probably one of the biggest things we need to get across to people. This is not, addictions are not something you go to a hospital and get into a 30-day program and then you're cured. You know, its treatment is ongoing and continue to go throughout your entire life.
All right, so as we go through this now, give us some stats.
Yeah, so I mean, I think some of the amazing stats, you know, let's talk about opioids just for a second. You know, we know there's a huge opioid crisis in this country. Well, the United States makes up 5% of the world's population, but yet we consume 80% of the opioids that are produced. That's not even saying about the illicit. So just think about that number; it's staggering.
Well, what is the sense in the medical field, in you know, as to why it's gone on that way? I mean, I know there's a million little examples, but is there some larger cultural explanation for that?
Yeah. Matter of fact, you know, go back a few years, and the Joint Commission, who's a wonderful institution that makes sure that, you know, hospitals and doctors do what they're supposed to do, felt that pain was not being treated adequately. And in 2001, they said, you know what, we want a fifth vital sign. Forget about blood pressure, respiratory rate, you know, heart rate. We wanted you to address pain with every single patient. Couple that with the same thing with the pharmaceutical companies coming out with the drugs like Norco and Vicodin, saying, these aren't addictive drugs. It's okay to use these in people. So doctors, unfortunately, were taking and using Norco and Vicodin for probably pain situations that they didn't, because they knew where they were being measured on this. And unfortunately, we, the medical profession, have to step up and say, you know what, we're responsible for a lot of this.
And the question, too, and this was in the Frontline documentary on Dayton, Ohio, but the idea of the pharmaceutical industry having to share some responsibility in this because they knew that insurance companies would cover this drug, so they pushed it hard, and people were prescribing it because, and people were using it because it was covered by insurance.
Absolutely. And very inexpensive medications. So, yeah, Justin, you hit it right on the head. And if you saw last week or 2 weeks ago, I guess, you know, a new opioid medication came out. Normally, we would be celebrating that news because it's going to allow us to treat patients with pain. But instead, the FDA was just smashed in backlash of, how could you do this? How could you approve another opioid medication knowing what we're going through in this country?
Yeah, well, needs go on, right? That's the thing. I mean, if you had one controversial cure for a cancer, you wouldn't stop working on curing cancer. So I understand why the public's upset, but you can't just shut it down.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so one of the other things that jumped out of your statistical breakdown in the notes that we post with your podcast were some of the famous names that have had opioid addictions. I mean, we could attribute Michael Jackson's death to a type of painkiller. We certainly know that Prince died that way. But I don't know about Charles Dickens.
Yeah, how about that? Charles Dickens used opiates daily.
Every day?
Yep.
It's just a, and he died before he was 60 years old.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, go to those deaths. You know, you talk about Belushi and you talk about Dickens and Elvis Presley and Prince. Well, you know what? 100 individuals a day die from opioids. Another 250 die from alcohol abuse. That's 350 people. That's like a 747 crashing every single day.
Yeah, how about that?
And yet we really don't hear that all the time. We don't hear that in the news, and we're not pushing treatment options and research as much as we need to.
Dak, in the medical community, do you guys look at it differently when there's somebody that gets opioids on the street versus somebody who has a doctor that just keeps writing them prescriptions? Like, Prince wasn't buying them on the street corner. He had a doctor that gave him an endless supply. Like, how do you navigate those two different... They're both addiction, but one is more doctor, you know, related.
Do you grade one differently?
Yeah, we definitely do. You know, the pill mills are really what is frustrating, and those are the ones that doctors are just, you know, patients are lining up outside their office knowing that they're going to walk in and leave with a prescription. Because eventually those are the people that are going to continue that addiction out on the street, or they're selling those drugs to other individuals. So they're, quote unquote, not buying them on the street because they're getting them from a physician. But we know that there are pill mills. You know, the state monitors us very, very closely now as far as how many prescriptions we write. We have a website that I can put in Steve Cochran in your birth date into a website, and it will tell me every pain medication or addictive medication that you've gotten. The requirement now for a doctor, before I write a prescription for any opiate, I have to go and check that website to make sure that you have not been getting it from other doctors.
Pharmacy shopping, right? That's what Rush Limbaugh was doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, the sad thing is, we live within 45 minutes of two different states. The Illinois Department of Professional Monitoring, where we can go and look at up the web, is only for Illinois.
Right.
I can't tell you what you got in Indiana. I can't tell you what you got in Wisconsin.
Doc, you mentioned the celebrity deaths and overdoses that could maybe help shed light on what's happening. But do we have to go deeper than that? Because I think a lot of people will look at the names that you mentioned. Steve mentioned Michael Jackson. You mentioned John Belushi. And you think of lack of willpower. You think of moral choices. The idea of addiction being something that decadence played a role because they could get it and they, you know, were sad about being celebrities, whatever it might be. But the point being that there's so many stigmas how people get addicted or how, where addiction comes from. Do we have to deal with that as a society first?
Absolutely. That's probably the biggest hurdle we need to get over right now, Justin, is this is not a willpower issue. This is not because an individual is weak. This is a medical condition. When people take drugs, they get this thing called the reward circuit in their brain, and a chemical called dopamine is released. And that's why it continues to do that. It says, oh, if I take this, I'm going to get this feeling of euphoria. And it keeps telling you that to do that. So this is a chemical issue in the brain for the most part. Now, initially, the first time you take it, sometimes it's voluntary, right? No one's going to die, or no one's going to give you a prescription for cocaine. You might try it. Opiates, on the other hand, are different. Marijuana is a little bit different. But for the most part, it's that chemical reward cycle circuit that goes on in our brain that tells us, I want to do that again. I want to do that again. And that's what we need to understand. And that's what some of the medications that we're using to treat these addictions are doing.
I want to come back and we'll pick up on that, too. And why is that addiction so strong in opiates, or is it certain opiates that it's so strong? Anyway, that people just cannot do anything but figure out how to get their next prescription filled. Talking with Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, the pursuit of better health care starts here. All right, Doc, so let's run through some of the lightning round stuff here. Opioids, we got much more to discuss with it, and why is it such a strong addiction?
Well, that is the unfortunate thing, is opiates are probably the most highly addictive medication that we have. You know, some estimates say you could be addicted after two or three doses. Well, think about the individual who's had surgery and is given 30 doses, 60 doses, 90 doses. So very, very highly, highly addictive, and probably the biggest one that we have a concern of right now. I can tell you, I haven't written an opiate probably in 6 months. And really? I've taken care of people with broken bones. You know, now we're starting to look at other alternative measures because of we know of this fear.
The irony here is you need drugs in many cases to get off drugs. And there are some amazing medications that can help stem the tide of addiction. Is antabuse, is that the alcohol one?
Yeah, yeah. So someone that, you know, often with alcohol abuse, the individual has to pretty much hit bottom because they look at it and say, hey, you know, it's legal. I can do it. Everybody's drinking. Matter of fact, there's high estimates that 1 out of every 8 people is an alcoholic. So there's almost this social acceptance of alcohol. Individuals that hit bottom say, hey, you know what? You're going to lose your family. You're going to lose your job. You're going to lose your life. Often those individuals will say, put me in treatment. I still know I'm going to have those cravings. So I'm going to take this medicine called antabuse so that if they were to drink, if that craving got so bad that they were to drink, they become violently ill. And they'll stop drinking because of the medication that they're taking.
Yeah, because you end up having to make that choice. What's is it Naltrexone or Naltrexone and Campyl?
Naltrexone, yep. It's another one. That one at least takes away some of the pleasure that people have when they if they're drinking. So another medication that can be used in individuals with alcohol abuse.
All right, so these drug take-back days, are they working?
Yeah, they are. Matter of fact, we just had a National Drug Take-Back Day just a couple of weeks ago at the end of October. I want to say even here at CDH, I want to say we got 135 pounds of medication.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, we're taking back everything because it's not just opiates, but you know, we'll take antibiotics. We'll take things. We just don't want people to throw those away
or and flush
them into the water. Exactly.
Right.
But the opiates are probably the biggest one because people don't understand or under-realize that a lot of opiates that you say, oh, I'm going to save this in case I get hurt, are being stolen out of your house or used by others illegally.
Doc, what are you guys doing, though, for the people that were originally prescribed opioids because they were in pain? How are you actually helping people to get out of pain more naturally?
Yeah. You know, it's unfortunate that we didn't know this years ago because now we have other medications that we can use, other treatments that we can use. Acupuncture, acupressure, believe it or not, some of those relaxation techniques, other medications that take down inflammation, which is where the cause of the pain is, versus taking away the pain. So we're starting to go back to the foundation of what caused the pain versus let's just take the pain away. And it's a new way for us to think about pain relief.
All right, so what about coke and weed? I mean, if you have this incredible spike in opioids, are there less people doing cocaine, for instance?
Well, that's what you would have hoped, right? But
right.
Unfortunately, we did see a big decrease in cocaine, but now we're starting to see a steady increase. I mean, just recently, last couple of, 2015, if I'm not mistaken, you know, we had one of the highest death rates from cocaine overdoses that we hadn't seen in 5, 6, 7 years. They're coming back up. Marijuana is that really interesting one. You know, you have 33 states that have approved use of medical marijuana. It's been almost 25 years of medical marijuana in California. And now we have 10 states with recreational use and probably on our way to many more. So they're starting to see that marijuana is more of a, all right, we can control that a little bit. And there's many studies. Many people feel it's a gateway drug. They feel that if we make it legally recreational, then it won't become a gateway drug because now you're going through a normal pattern to purchase it versus buying it from someone on the street who has other options for you.
Are people who really need opioids and these types of medications, are they able to get them now? Or because of the extra hoops they're jumping through, are they dealing with pain they didn't have to deal with before?
Yes, probably a little bit of both. You know, we have a lot of oncology patients that are extremely uncomfortable, and they certainly deserve the medication to make their pain go away. Doctors, unfortunately, sometimes are a little bit more hesitant now. But I think if you have a good relationship with your doctor, he knows your medical condition, and he knows if you need those medications, you're going to get them. For some people who have chronic pain, whether it's back pain or hip pain, you know, doctors are, again, going to be trying to say, okay, what can we do from physical therapy point of view? What can we do from anti-inflammatories to relieve some of that pain? Sometimes they'll even use steroid injections. You probably heard people who've gotten steroid injections in their back. Those are some of the things that we need to start using instead of jumping initially to the opioids.
Before we run out of time here, and by the way, Dean, hold on. We'll get your answer to your question off the air from Doc before he hangs up. But you don't want to leave people hanging here. I don't want to leave people hanging here. You got people listening now who love somebody who's in trouble. What do they do?
Yeah. it's probably one of the biggest things. Somebody can walk into my office and I can see them and I won't have any clue about what they're doing, because for 15, 20 minutes in my office, they can be nice and polite and everything is fine. What you really need to do is, you guys, as family members, as friends, if you notice someone who has an addictive personality, if you know someone that's addicted, if you know someone that's abusing alcohol, step up. Try to encourage them to get treatment, because often it's gonna, you're going to wait until something really bad happens. They either nearly overdose, they do overdose, they lose their job, they're kicked out of their family. Those are the individuals that if we would have stepped up and said, hey, let's get you some treatment. Hey, you have a problem. We need to work with this. Those are the ones that you're going to be able to save their life and make a big impact. And it won't hurt you as well, because now you're going to continue to have a friend or a family member that's been treated and is now back in society.
Yeah, and Al-Anon is a great resource for that, too, because it'll encourage you to not be codependent. Trust me, nobody was more codependent than I was with my parents and my brother. And it doesn't work. You can't love somebody out of addiction, and you can't give them enough money to make them see the light or whatever else you may be doing. So it's not your fault, but certainly take care of yourself. And get to an Al-Anon meeting, and you'll see what Doc's talking about as well. These are great notes, Doc. So Dr. Mouse basically writes a book every week on medicine, and then we get to exploit it by listening to the podcast and connecting to those notes. When are those up, Sandberg?
Right after the 10 minutes. 10 minutes most, right?
10 minutes isn't fast enough.
Yeah.
thank you, buddy.
You got it.